Today is the 22nd. Good morning. Today's regular meeting of the Shasta County Elections Commission is now called to order. It is Monday, April 22nd, and the time is 9 a.m. The commission will provide members of the public with a public comment open time period where the public may address the commission on any item not listed on the agenda that is within the subject matter jurisdiction of this commission. Members of the public may also comment on any item on the consent calendar or regular calendar before or during the commission's consideration of that item. Commission action or discussion cannot be taken on non-agendized matters, but the commission may briefly respond to statements or questions. We encourage everyone to fill out a speaker request form, which can be found in the back little cubbies, and submitted to the clerk of the board over here to my left. The meeting will likely adjourn sometime before noon or noon. With that, we will begin with the invocation, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance.
Dearly Father, thank you again for bringing us here safely. We seek to honor you in all that we do, so we pray that you will guide us today and give us peace and give us grace. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Amen.
Salute, pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Amen.
So first up, we have a presentation by Dr. Laura Hobbs. About findings from the March 5th, 2024 primary election related to the Hart InterCivic audit log and the cast vote record data.
Board, are we on? Okay. Good morning, board. I did make some slides just to make your viewing easier. Is it possible to have this for them? No? Okay. Well, for you guys, if you have internet access and for the audience as well, you can find the slides at www.shastavote.org.
Are they the same ones as your handout?
No, this is just to make the presentation flow easier and just to have it right in front. Okay. But don't worry. We also have handouts in the back for anybody who would like them. And that has all the information that I'll be discussing today on it.
And Ms. Hobbs, if you would like to provide me with a copy of that, I can also distribute it to the commissioners as well and make it available to the public.
Okay, will do. Thank you. So I'll be talking today about mine and others' observations of the primary that was on March 5th, 2024. So a little bit of background. The observations started on election day, and they went on. They continued on to the certification, which was March 28th. We witnessed ballot scanning that was done in the Bat Cave using four monitors that connected to the four scanner computer combos called clients. We collected four key data points: the date and the time that the batch was scanned, the number of ballots per batch, as well as the precinct number, which is hand typed into the batch notes, and the batch number. We compared our firsthand observations to the audit log data. This is who did what and when. So there was 285,000 lines of text. I sorted the audit log entries into categories: batch created, batch saved, and batch discarded. And I also compared our direct observations to the cast vote record data. And what did we find? There were inconsistencies in all the four categories we looked at. And these areas did not match your observations. So the inconsistencies were in the time and date run, the number of ballots per batch, the precinct number, and the batch number. So now we're on page 2. Many of the dates on the audit log are incorrect. So I'm just going to start one by one. We're talking about the time and the date that the batch was run. So election day, batch 69, run on February 9th, it said, according to the audit log. That's only 4 days after the ballots went out. But based on firsthand observation, we know those ballots were actually run on election day, 3/5/2024. Batch vote by mail number 44, the audit log said it was run on 4/3/24. But we know that batch was run on the 8th of March at 10 a.m. And vote by mail batch 147. This one, the audit log said, was run on 3/5/2024, but the actual run day was on the 8th of March at 12:20 a.m. So this makes the observer wonder, especially in the case of the ballots that the audit log says were run on February 9th, it makes the observer wonder, were the election results preloaded in the system? Why were they even scanning ballots on February the 8th and February the 9th? So another key area that I noticed discrepancies was in the number of ballots per batch. According to the observation, batch number 199 was scanned at 2:04 p.m. on the 11th of March and contained 99 ballots. We saw each time and how many ballots were scanned because it showed up on the screen. You could actually see them. It'd be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, on and on up until it reached the final count. So according to the audit log, this batch, 199, said there was only one ballot scanned. We know by firsthand observation that 99 ballots were scanned in that particular batch. And out of 167 vote-by-mail batches analyzed, only 46 of the audit log batches per batch, the audit log ballots per batch matched the observation ballots per batch. So that's 1 out of 3 batches were credited incorrectly to us. And on page 2, I have a little table, summary of the ballots added or lost. What this amounts to in District 1 is about 1,000 ballots lost. District 2, 1,400 ballots lost. District 3, 500 ballots lost. District 4, almost 700 ballots lost. And lastly, District 5, 275 ballots lost. However, the ballots added, you can see that was not as common as ballots lost. There was a lot fewer ballots added than ballots lost. So their accounting of the number of ballots per batch was incorrect, especially for the vote-by-mail batches. These are districts based on observed precinct numbers, and we'll get into why that is important to notate later. Also on this page, note that those were the vote-by-mail batches and not the election day batches. The election day batches, for the most part, added up. I'll get into an instance where they did not, but for the most part, the number of ballots per batch matched to a T, and the batch size in the election day ballot varied. It wasn't always 100 ballots per batch. It was 18 ballots, 25 ballots, 36 ballots, unique batch sizes that matched to a T. So there's something unique about the vote by mail in the fact that it's not matching up the audit log. And page 3, the audit log precinct numbers do not match observations. This is a huge concern. Out of 137 vote by mail batches that were compared to our firsthand observations, only 2 audit log precinct numbers match the observed precinct numbers. And this is a table here of what we saw. You can see the area that has been highlighted, the observed precinct number versus the audit log batch precinct number. And those numbers don't match. And let me explain to you. The first number listed there, the precinct number, 6 digits. The first number, if it starts with the 3, that's in District 3. If it starts with a 4, I'm looking at the first line here, starts with a 4, that's in District 4. So we're talking about numbers that were in entirely different precincts. I mean, entirely different districts. Sorry about that. So each district, say District 2, for instance, has 12 precincts, but they all start with the number 2 for District 2. So this is a huge concern. This is the most egregious error of all the errors that we witnessed, because they use the precinct numbers to balance the entire election. That's how they provide the official results. That's the scaffolding on which they use to tell us how many votes we got per precinct, and that gives us the sum total of the election results. And another problem that we saw was the Election Day audit log and Vote by Mail audit log may contain two sets of books. This is on page 4. The sets of batches run on February 8th and February 9th show up as Election Day 45 through 80, Vote by Mail 12 through 44. And these are actually duplicate batch numbers. They're suspicious because they do not contain observed, they do not match the observed dates or times, and they also do not match the observed names. So the unique naming scheme for these ballots, or for these batches, I should say, it started with CC1 or CC2 through 4, PCT. And it makes you wonder, are these part of an election preload? The early votes scanned before Election Day leaned heavily in the direction of Alan Long, Matt Plummer, Yes on the Recall, and others. This trend was seen in both the cast vote records and the historical data comparison of the early vote versus Election Day. And I'm going to, now we're on page 5, and there's the historical data analysis. So historically, there's very little variation between the early vote and the Election Day tallies. So the first column is the early vote, second is Election Day tallies. And the difference is the difference in their percentage between the first drop and the second drop. So historically, there's very little difference, you know, between 0 and 7% difference between the early vote and the Election Day tallies. But what we saw in this election was the difference between those two time points was up to 33% in the case of the Yes on Cry recall. All the others in the range of 19 to 33%. This is quite unnatural. And the reason is because of the law of large numbers. As you count more and more numbers, it's harder and harder to change that average or that settling point. typically in the past, as candidates watch the percentages come in, if they were down by 1 or 2% from their opponent, they knew just based on that first drop that they more than likely lost the election. Now, with such wild fluctuations, that's no longer the case. And some people might say this is because of there's a different party preference of the early voters. In Shasta County, that's not the case. I analyzed using the ballot tracks data, and I found that looking at the early returns by party up to 3/4/24, there were more Republicans submitting ballots than Democrats. And I broke it down by district on page 4. You can see in District 3, for instance, there was 1,231 more Republicans than Democrats submitting ballots early. And then we also looked at the cast vote record as well and tried to compare to make sense of what the audit log was saying and how it didn't agree with our firsthand observations. But just a brief summary, the cast vote record analysis enables you to replay the election from start to finish. And they use this information to tabulate the official election results. So the CVR precinct number, and I'm looking at the table on page 6, it's called Comparison of CVR Data to Observed Tabulation Data. The CVR precinct number does not match the observed precinct numbers, with only one exception. So if you look at batch 69, this is the one exception where it does match. The CVR numbers, precinct numbers are in the box on the kind of the middle of the table. And you can see that in this particular case, the election day observed numbers match the CVR number 2. But in all the other cases, it does not match the observed election day or the observed vote by mail. It only matches the audit log precinct number, which, as I mentioned earlier, the audit log precinct number does not match what we saw as firsthand witnesses to the scanning of these ballots. Someone by the name of Steve Umfleet, a computer engineer, cyber engineer, analyzed the CVR data, and what he found was that there was a dual nature of the District 2 election contest. He removed the election day votes because they are unique from the rest of the votes. So despite the fact that he removed the election day votes, he still saw that there were two unique phases which were identified and analyzed. One phase was the beginning one-third of the election, and the second phase was the last two-thirds of the election. And similar to Jeffrey O'Donnell's work, he found that the cumulative ratio did not converge at its final set point early in the election, as would be expected in a fair election. And I also attached the full report at the back of the document that you've all received here. So you can read that, and good luck to you if you'll actually understand it. It's pretty heavy in the mathematics and whatnot. So, now, to continue with the CVR analysis in comparison to our firsthand observations, we're still on page 6. So the way the elections workers described it is there are two buckets. There's the election day bucket and the vote-by-mail buckets. So the operator must first choose what bucket to place the batch in. This is called the vote type if you look at the audit log file. So election day, you have batches 1 through 93. A vote by mail, you have batches 1 through about 350. So batches 94 through 350 should only occur once, right? Because the election day only goes up to 93 batches. So what we found, and we're on page 6, there's a table there. It's called Duplicate Vote by Mail CVR Batches. And you can see that there's a duplicate batch 102, 113, 119, 159, and there's no logical explanation for why there are duplicates there. And interestingly, there's a triplicate for batch number 5. Since we only have two categories, why the triplicate? And this brings us to the memory hole data, which is also a factor of duplicate batches. Sometimes you have to discard batches. There's legitimate reasons for that when you have to do a rerun. In those cases, you have the same user, the same tabulator, the same precinct number. But I found there was 40 cases, 40 batches that were illegitimate duplicates. They were not true duplicates. They had a different user, different tabulator, and different precinct number. Within these 40 batches, there were about 4,000 ballots from all of Shasta County that went missing. And I call them memory hole because once the batch is scanned, it's stored away in a cardboard box, never to be seen again. And if Hart InterCivic writes over the data from that batch, it's as if the batch never existed. So in summary, the election, which observers witnessed firsthand, did not occur as witnessed behind the scenes of the Hart InterCivic machine using these audit log documents. Mismatched precinct numbers were the most egregious and pervasive discrepancies found, as the precinct is the foundation that the official election results are based upon. And let's see, that one shouldn't be there. So my recommendations to the board is that we need a full forensic audit of the audit log files and cast vote records as compared to firsthand observations by an independent outside investigator. And I would just also like to thank the members of the community that sat there and took took note of these observations, writing them down by hand, spending many hours of their day as volunteers down there so that we would have this data available to compare to the computer tabulation. And I would like to state that any election that fails an audit should be decertified. And if the findings presented here are substantiated, Shasta County should immediately move to a completely transparent and auditable hand-counting system. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hobbs. That was very interesting. is there any public comment on this item?
I think we should have a chance to ask questions first before we...
Oh, sure. Yes.
So it's not very simple to follow the process, but in research, you know, there's data that supports your information, and then there's data that perhaps would contradict it. Can you think of anything that would challenge your assumptions on any of this data, like something that you might not understand, or mm-hmm. Have you thought of anything that might be contrary to that?
I have more questions than answers, to tell you the truth. And one of the presumptions that I have made is that there's a second set of books going on here. I would like to know exactly who scanned those ballots on February the 8th. Where did they come from? Why were they scanned? How come they had a batch size of 250, where more commonly you would see batch sizes of 100? So who had submitted those ballots only 4 days after the election ballots were sent out?
Did you ask Joanna about that?
I haven't directly asked her about that. I have asked her for the batch detail report, which would give me a lot more information about these batches, and she has not responded in a timely fashion to my public records request.
What was that you requested?
Batch detail report.
What's contained in the batch detail report?
You know, I haven't seen it yet firsthand, but I know that that's an option. If you go to the Hart Intercivic Manual, you can see the types of reports you can request.
Okay.
But I would assume it would contain this basic information: the precinct number, the number of ballots per batch, the time it was run, and so on.
What would be, if you could pick top two questions, what would they be that you want answers to?
That I want answers to? I'm really curious about how the CVR relates to the audit log, and how come there are three batch number fives? Where did that third batch number five come from? Why are there duplicate batches 102, 113, 119, when according to my analysis, there should only be two, there should only be duplicates under the number of 93, which is the number of election day ballots. Does that make sense? And I'd also like to know about the discarded batches. So I would like to know why they were discarded, when they had a different precinct number, a different user, a different runtime, and a different tabulator. So what happened to those batches? Did they show up in the final official results, or were they completely just memory hold? But first and foremost, I want to know how come the precinct names don't match the precinct names that we observed. And It would be one thing if they just, all of them didn't match, but the fact that they do match when you look at the election day data tells me that there is a system where something is at least held consistent.
All right, so another thing, when there's a historical change, which we have in your historical data, then I think, what's going on? What happened between the 2020 primary and the 2020 general? And I feel like from the presentation of the data, the answer that I'm given is just election fraud happened. But there are other historical changes that happened, right?
Well, go ahead, if you have some in mind.
I mean, the March 3rd, 2020 primary election did not have universal vote by mail ballots. Mm-hmm. But the 2020 general election did. Is that considered in when you're analyzing the historical data that you have a different type of election?
You know, that would be a very good avenue to follow. That could be a source for the fraud. I don't have any firsthand information as to what's causing the differences.
Well, I just wonder, and I don't have the answers, but maybe, you know, we have hundreds of years, well, I mean, maybe not hundreds, but we have a lot more data pre-universal vote-by-mail ballot elections than we do vote-by-mail ballot elections. You know, maybe it's a different type of analysis that we need to develop to compare the two.
Yeah, that's something to consider, and it does relate a bit to the cast vote analysis,
right.
Because if you do different computer iterations of a fair election, you randomize the ballots as if it were in a completely random election, and you can run that over and over again to see what the expected result would be, and it has to do with the fact that after many, many trials, it converges right. around the mean or the average.
I understand that. I also understand that when they run the data for those elections, at least in Shasta County, it's not randomized. And so when the ballots come in, it makes a different pattern.
Yeah.
That's why I think we need...
It's interesting because it is pre-sorted, as you mentioned. Right. They pre-sort by precinct, and in this election, they also pre-sorted by party preference.
Right.
But... It's interesting that we saw that pattern, irregardless of the fact that they pre-sorted.
Okay. So.
I actually don't. I think that a lot of these questions are not going to be answered unless we have a forensic audit, and so I believe we should suggest to the board that we do a forensic audit. There's just too many questions on too much stuff.
Anything else, you guys? Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Did you have anything?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Wait, sorry. I have one more question. Just for clarification. So you have vote-by-mail observation on page 3 of the handout, and you have the audit log batch created. Is that a handwritten log, or is that a computer-generated log?
So are you talking about our firsthand observation?
No, I realize that your observation would be handwritten.
Yes, that's handwritten.
But the audit log batch, it says created PCNT.
Okay, so yeah, that is, it's created as the operator, the person who's running the scanning, she will type in the precinct number as she's scanning them. So, or before she initiates the scan. That's one of the fields. It's under the notes section. So that's something that they type in by hand, and it shows up in the log files. If you look under the batch created data, it shows up there under the notes.
So I'm curious how, I mean, you might not have this answer, but how you're there at the elections office observing.
Mm-hmm.
The elections worker types in the precinct, begins to scan ballots. You're observing, but the number that comes up on the screen that you're observing is a different precinct number?
No, the number that comes up on my screen is exactly what she typed in. When I look post-election at the audit log files, the numbers that she typed in that I saw on the screen don't match the audit log file.
That batch number.
For that batch. Does that make sense?
No, because, well, I mean, it might make sense, except for just the way you answered my question, it didn't make sense. But here on your chart, where it has the audit log batch created, that's from data that you received later.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's correct.
But theoretically, that's still from the elections worker typing in the number and then scanning the ballots.
In theory, it should be, but it's not because I was there when she was typing it in. So it had to have been computer generated.
So are there the ones that you observed, are those some of the ones that you said are lost then? Let's take the first one. 320068 is the observed precinct. Doesn't match 490650.
Yeah.
Did the one that you observed disappear, or is it in the files somewhere?
I suspect it's in the files somewhere, but I don't know. I have no proof of that. I would like to know what happened to it. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Any public comment on this item? All right, seeing none, or?
Yes.
Okay.
Good morning, Chair and Board. I was putting together a public comment, but I'll use this instead. Has this handout, and maybe Dr. Hobbs will know, has this been emailed, presented, and given to the ROV office so that they can contemplate? I'm seeing this for the first time this morning. It's a lot to digest and to multitask while taking pictures and whatnot. I'm going to have to look at this myself. So that's one question for clarification. I don't know if you know that or not, if you got it CC'd to ROV, Joanna, and whoever else. And I'm not sure, because for a lot of people to understand the math and stats, it's hard to hear it auditory, so I'm just going to clarify, is this meeting strictly an auditory, or is it also being filmed and audio both? I presume these meetings are just audio.
It's just audio.
Okay.
Dr. Hobbs says she gave out the website. I don't know if you caught that.
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
shastavote.org. Mm-hmm.
And then she also has the printout of her presentation in the
which
back.
Which is in our board
yeah.
packet.
And they're going fast. I don't know if there's any left back.
And it's
there.
Also online in the board
yeah.
packet.
Yeah, it's in the board packet for the agenda.
Okay, that was just my thing with massive amount of time done by Dr. Hobbs. I can't thank her enough. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Jim Burnett, and I was one of the small army of observers for this last election cycle, and I did see evidence of a lot of confusion on the part of the workers up in the Batcave, moving ballots around and having to do the same thing apparently over and over again, meaning that they looked like they were moving in an orderly fashion, and then all of a sudden something broke the concentration, and they had to, it looked like they appeared to go back and start over again. In other words, it looked like a false start to me, several series of false starts. I can't say that for sure, because there was, even though we could see, there's still enough of a barrier to where you couldn't see exactly what they were doing and the exact things that they were working on, but we were told when we asked questions about it, they would explain what's going on. Still, I don't think that qualifies as meaningful observation. So my chief criticism of the ROV this last election cycle is that there wasn't much meaningful observation compared to, say, two or three or four cycles ago. So little by little, we've been set back, and maybe we have to sit in front of computer monitors to see numbers displayed, which is what I was doing, and then writing down batch numbers and the time that they were committed and how many were successful, things like that, whereas in the past, you had a little more close, you could actually see the processes. So I would call for more meaningful observation. And also, like Bev just said, and many others over the past few weeks, a full forensic audit of that department. And I would add a full audit of the most recent elections going all the way back to 2020 primary. And the reason I say that is that California imposed a universal vote-by-mail mandate for the upcoming, at that time, November 22 general election. So I think that would be good to see a before and after analysis statistically and any other thing you could measure for these elections. And so, yeah, I think we need more examination, we need more audits, because there's a lot of confusion going on, as we can see. And I don't accept the stamp of approval by an official at the ROV as being a very credible source that, hey, everything's cool, because that's just accepting one authority's opinion of it. And so that's not evidence. That's appeal to authority. Okay, thank you.
Jim, I have a question for you. It's been a little while since I've observed at the ROV. At the Batcave, there's no audio, is that correct? You don't know what discussions are happening in there?
No.
Okay.
No.
Thank you.
Good question. Thanks.
Good morning. And thank you, Lord Jesus, for giving me strength and courage enough to get up here and talk. Elections should be transparent. There's no reason to hide things when you're honest. There's never been a reason to hide anything when you're honest. There's only reasons to hide things when you're not honest. It's dishonesty. And lack of transparency is a problem. And so I agree with Bev. We need a full forensic audit. This is way too much. It's been going on for way too long. It's not the last since 2020. This is going on for the last three decades, at least, that I'm going back. And every time that the citizens come up and try to speak up or say something, they make a law such as 969 that comes in and makes things even harder and less transparent. So being transparency is a must, and being that there's things hidden from us and batches missing and ballots not accounted for and, of course, my favorite, dead people voting, we need a full forensic audit. Thank you.
Good morning. How can we allow our sacred voting process to be in a state of compromise election after election after election? Reform must take place. Not doing a forensic audit is unacceptable. The election process is very insecure with no accountability. Auditing and chain of custody should be mandatory like they are in banks. The lack of security and transparency by our election officials and staff make our election system a joke. It's a clown show. These agencies serve the people, not the opposite. Somehow this has been forgotten and ignored. Election after election, they refuse to be truly transparent and secure. They have hot ballots, active ballots in their possession for at least 2 months before an election is certified. 99% plus of the time, there's no monitoring or accountability to the public. We don't know who has access to these rooms.
I'd just like to remind people that this is commenting on item R1,
okay,
which is the presentation that Dr. Laura Hobbs gave.
Okay, I was an election observer, so I'm just making a comment.
But I mean, yeah, we have public comment, and we also have an item on the agenda for the March 5th election. But right now, it's just comment on her presentation.
Okay.
If you could.
I was an election observer, and it was the lack of the craziness and the lack of transparency and security. But I'll save the rest of my for the public comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody else for public comment on R1?
So, Mrs. Hobbs, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's still two outstanding records that have yet to be given to the public, and that would be the cast vote record final and the audit log final. Here's a question that I think the registrar needs to be right here at this microphone answering. Why are they still in possession of election records, and they're not released to the public when this election's already been certified? The day the registrar certified this election, all election records should have been completed 100% and then available for public disclosure, period. End of subject. So I'm really curious. You know, I'm the cynic in the room sometimes. Well, most of the time. What are they doing with that? This cast vote record? What are they doing with this audit log? Especially now that they know the cat's out of the bag. What are they doing with these records? So did she certify illegally because the records were not completed? What is she doing with the records? How many times did I ask that? What is she doing with these records? Why are they not completed and publicly available? This is a huge problem, and the registrar needs to be at this microphone in public and answer that question. Thank you.
All righty. If that's it for R1, moving on to public comment. Open time. So first up, Lori Bridgeford.
Good morning, Chair and Board. For public comment, is there a way you're going to be identifying replacement? If I'm hearing that this is your last meeting, Commissioner Bev Gray, correct me if I'm wrong, and that District 4 will be replaced, I'm hearing, by Patty Plum. We still have Tim Garman, supervisor, and Mary Rickert, supervisor, who's not available or she's out ill, whatever the situation is. And I'm understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, that a suggested person does not have to live in the district that they would be potentially representing. So
correct.
That's good to hear because there's a lot of people that want to participate and they don't want to move to be on a commission that's you don't even get paid for. And that was the main point I have because I don't have the calendar in front of me when you meet again, but This meeting that started today at 9, I found out yesterday, late yesterday, that it was not at 2 o'clock. So I hope people don't show up at 2 o'clock today. I don't know the exact super precise reason. I have an idea what was happening. But that is really rough on the public because we have to do a lot of rescheduling with work and school and families and so forth. So thank you.
Yeah, I'll speak to that. Because this was Ms. Gray's last meeting, she had a prior commitment this afternoon, and so we just accommodated her. But normally our meetings will be at 2 o'clock.
So I apologize for any inconvenience, but I totally appreciate it.
That's that. Okay.
Will the next meeting
cancel? We'll talk. Next up, Margaret Cantrell.
Imagine, if you will, a pot of water on the stove, and the water is lukewarm. Now imagine throwing a handful of frogs into it, and they're happy because the water feels good. And now imagine turning up the heat a little by little until they're cooked, their goose is cooked. Yesterday I came into possession of this 23-page document call from the Election Integrity Project, California, the Golden State Agenda, California's legislative blueprint for the destruction of election integrity. For 30 years, almost, well, let me see, 1998, 25 years, they've been passing measure after measure that gradually is tightening down our ability to have free and transparent elections. 60 laws regarding voting, regarding elections in 25 years, and they're reaching the end with AB 969. They're reaching the end. I'm speaking this today because it really needs to go to the board, but if we are going to take the time to pass a charter county law, then we should be using that to pass resolutions so that we can have free and fair elections. And we need to get on the ball or our goose will be cooked.
Margaret, sorry, does it say in it how many laws were passed just last year?
Oh, I'm sure it does. I didn't count that way. So if you want to know, I'll go count them.
Yeah, because there was a lot last year.
Yeah. They're turning up the heat.
Yeah, thank you.
All righty, Dr. Laura Hobbs.
Thank you. I want to agree with everything that Margaret said, is that this seems to be a coordinated effort by the state to lock us down. And one thing that I found out was that they are currently passing legislation that would make it so that us being able to observe the batch numbers, the precinct numbers, the time they were run, the number of ballots in each batch, so that that would be all illegal for us to see and to have data from. So these are very basic observation tools, and they want to take that away from us. The state of California is not working in our favor. There's no end to the measures they will take to block transparency in our elections and to block meaningful observation. So that's a serious concern for me. But I wanted to take a moment to express my appreciation for all you guys on this board. It means a lot to me as a citizen to have a place where I can go and address my concerns regarding elections. And the fact that you guys are all doing this as volunteers, I truly appreciate that. And Bev, as you're stepping down, I want to acknowledge you and the time that you've spent. And you've taken a lot of harassment from people, vexatious public records requests that, you know, seem to be more as a way of harassing and intimidating than actually trying to find true information. I totally support public records requests. I'm not saying that that's not a good thing, but it can be abused. So I want to thank you for all your time and effort and applaud you for your public service to the community. And I really hope that they will find a good replacement. And I'm disappointed that Tim Garman and Mary Rickard have not replaced the other two board members. To me, this is a very important avenue for the citizens to be able to redress their grievances to our government, and you guys as an avenue to that, because during public comment at the board meetings on Tuesday, we only have limited time, and we can't express all of our concerns when there's so many other issues, county-wide issues, that need to be discussed. So thank you all, and I really appreciate it.
I appreciate your kind words, Laura.
All right, anybody else for public comment?
Hello. So I just wanted to continue with what I was talking about earlier as an election observer. the elections... it was a joke, like I said. The transparency is a joke. As an observer, I saw, I was told that the warehouse where they are keeping our returned ballots is locked at all times, and if it's not locked, that means that someone's in there, or two people are in there. because one of the observers saw the door ajar. So I asked specifically about that. And then the day after I asked about that, I opened the door, and it was dark in there, so nobody was in there, and it opened up. And I have other observers who watched that, and apparently there was another door that I didn't observe that was unlocked. And this is by the exit. This is hot ballots that are in these warehouses that are unlocked, and where's the accountability? Where's the security? This is unacceptable. I mean, you've already heard testimonies about observers and the counting and how it was too far away to really observe. I know the balancing of the return ballots only had one day where they were open to the public for people to watch. And that day, there was three of us there that morning, and two of them left because they were whispering. We asked them if they could be louder, if they can explain what they're doing, and they refused. And so the two left because they couldn't observe. I tried to write down notes of what I could. Some of those boxes that should have been secured shut with tape were open. So, and I asked about that, and Janae said, oh, well, that's just human error. Some of them are open. But those had hot ballots in them, lots of them. There are so many disparities. In this election process, there's so much confusion, major pushback from our election officials. They act like Nazis who have no accountability to anybody but their superiors above them in Sacramento. I'm ashamed, very ashamed, of what my election office represents. Thank you.
I just want to add that those doors were unlocked for more than one day, I mean, or one incident, because I was there also, and the doors were unlocked, and that was a totally different day. So, and that was after they were already told they shouldn't be unlocked.
So, for the record, there were 7 laws passed in 2023, and just a note, the Constitution states that voting elections are up to the state, not the federal government. So that makes the National Voter Registration Act and the Help America Vote Act both unconstitutional and therefore illegal.
Good morning again. My topic this time is voter ID and the importance of it. The constitutions of all 50 states mandate that voting is a privilege given only to legal citizens. California's election code guarantees every registered citizen one privately cast, uninfluenced vote that is accurately tabulated. Yet for the past several decades, there has been a concerted effort by every level of government to water down this fundamental and necessary requirement such that millions of non-citizens can now easily register to vote and then vote in our elections. It's easy to gloss over the fact that for every vote that is cast by someone who is not legally entitled to do so, one vote that is cast by a legal citizen is actually nullified. It's as if the citizen's vote never happened, which is a civil rights violation of the highest order. As if this weren't bad enough, we have ridiculous laws foisted on us that don't allow potential voters to properly prove their identities. The most recent example of this stupidity is our own California Attorney General Rob Bonta, who is suing the city of Huntington Beach for recently changing their city's charter to require the showing of IDs before one gets to vote. And that would be starting in 2026. Bonta and Secretary of State Weber are outraged that a city in California is trying to protect the votes of all those who have the legal right to vote, which again is a fundamental civil right upon which is built our country's founding principle of the consent of the governed. People who are not qualified to vote should have no say in our elections until they become qualified, period, full stop. This is just one of the many laws that make fair elections impossible. The feds and state of California are hell-bent on making it easy for millions of non-qualified people to vote and then cancel out millions of legitimate votes. And finally, I want to thank Bev for her service and the rest of you guys for hanging in there and doing a great job, because I think we're making a good impact on Shasta County.
Thank you.
I would like to thank you ladies for your service. I'm just kidding. I know girls call girls guys. So continuing on the theme of lack of transparency, the state, again, you know, Margaret had the list of 60 laws in the last 25 years, but the state is continuing what they're doing now with many laws of recently, last couple years especially. They're getting rid of the paper trail. So electronic poll pads, okay? We've had those now, a couple of election cycles now. Either the law is pending or it's already passed that allows the registrar to, if they have an electronic database of the poll pads for an election, they're going to be able to not have to retain the paper street rosters. So, and I can go down the list. I've been studying the election on and off for 3+ years. So they're getting rid of the paper side of the elections. The only thing that they were going to wind up leaving is the ballot, which, now they're thinking of, like Ms. Hobbs said, now they're thinking of getting rid of the electronic side of the house where we can't observe electronic data. And I mean, when do we say enough is enough? two cycles ago, I requested the names of the precinct poll workers, our fellow citizens, and I obtained that. A month after I did that request, the state passed SB 1131 that said, you don't get to have your poll worker names anymore. We literally have secret poll workers now in California, folks. Direct retaliation against Shasta County. Do you want secret poll workers? What other secrets? I mean, there's stuff we don't even know yet. I mean, the stuff we found this cycle is absolutely amazing, by the way. But there's still stuff we just don't know because it's all happening behind closed doors. I mean, at what point do we say, it's almost finished. This box is almost, this choker around our neck is just about all the way cinched shut with regards to fair and transparent elections. And at some point, we have to realize that. And we got to take the bull by the horns, and we need to take full local control, especially of our local elections. We don't ask permission. This is you know what happens when we try to ask permission from the state. They take it away from us. And is that going to stop? Of course not. So let's stop playing, patty cakes with the state of California, and let's take full control of our local elections to start with anyways, because it's not going to get any better, and it is getting exponentially worse very quickly. In my humble opinion, if we don't take local control of our elections by this November, we're done. The elections are done.
All right. Anybody else for public comment?
Hello again. And I agree. If we don't fix this by November, we're done. This is it. So I'm just asking you guys, we need this audit. We need transparency. We've been asking for this. We've asked for it. Like Margaret said, 60 laws have been passed, and those are all obstacles. Every last one of them are obstacles. They take away our transparency. They take away our voice. Well, like Rich just said, we've had our voice taken away. This is it. So I'm pleading with you guys to make sure you do something to make sure we get our elections back, at least here locally. And I also want to thank you, Bev, for serving up here on this board. Thank you so much.
Okay, is that it for public comment? All righty, moving on to the consent calendar. I'd like to make a motion that we approve the minutes for the March 11th, March 25th, and April 8th, 2024 meetings. Do you guys have any comments?
Oh, I'll second it.
Okay. All those in favor?
If we could just ask for public comment before we move on. There might not be any, but just in case.
Okay. Any public comment on the past minutes that we're approving today? Okay, seeing none. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, moving on to R2. Consider a request to County Council to provide a legal opinion regarding accessing canceled voter rolls. Ms. Gray, do you want to speak to this at all?
I would like to know why we can't get the canceled voter rolls. I mean, you cannot truly look at the whole picture with just two pieces of a puzzle. And what is it that's on the canceled voter rolls that is not already on the inactive and the active records? It would be a lot easier to find those people that are deceased if you had all of the voter rolls to look at. And I know it is in court right now, but I don't know. I'd kind of like a explanation as why we can't get those.
What do you mean it's in court?
There is a court case that's challenging the constitutional rights to be able to see the council.
Here in California?
Yes.
Okay. Well, so should we just wait and see how that plays out?
Well, I'd kind of like to know.
Well, my understanding is that some counties were releasing that information.
Now they can't.
Now they can't. All of a sudden, now that
now
people want
it. Now all of a sudden,
it,
they can't.
Yeah, so now that people want it, they can't.
Right, exactly.
So the state came down and said, do you know what regulation they're pointing to?
No.
Okay. But if it's in court, do you know who's taking it to court?
Alexander Hamilton.
Okay.
I mean, Heverbush.
Is yeah. taking it to court
Free
against
faith.
The state. I mean,
pardon?
Against the state.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So in my opinion, it seems like we should just wait and see how that pans out, because they're already doing the work instead of us using our budget and our staff.
Well, we don't need to spend the money on it, but I was wondering if someone already knew a reason of why.
I don't think anybody would know unless they did the research.
And I imagine legal counsel wouldn't give you the why. They would just give you the regulation.
Well, I haven't gotten a regulation either,
okay.
So either one would be a step forward.
Can you request that from Heverbush?
I have the court case.
Okay, well, so somewhere in the court case,
yeah.
There should say something about
why they can't.
Yeah, why they can't.
Yeah.
Maybe you can give Lisa and I a copy of that?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anything else right now, or should take public comment?
I think public comment's fine.
Okay. Public comment on this item?
That's my card. Okay.
Regarding the voter rolls, I did actually request as a candidate to have the canceled voters, and I was denied that request, and they did cite some laws, but in my brief look over what they cited, it didn't relate to my request. But I think in regards to the voter rolls that we really need to just start fresh. We need to have a locally controlled voter roll, a local database that the state cannot access. We can send them copies at specified times so they can see who's on our voter roll and they can have a record. But they shouldn't be able to enter names into our voter rolls from a statewide location. The DMV and HHS should not be able to enter names into our voter rolls that have not been verified, that have not been vetted as true residents, as living individuals, as people who are citizens of this country. So I really feel like we need to just start fresh. I know it's a noble effort to try to get these canceled votes and try to figure out what happened and what went wrong and how many fraudulent people are on our voter rolls, but the fact of the matter is that this is an egg that cannot be unscrambled. We need to start fresh with local voter rolls. And we need to cut out all NGOs' access to these voter rolls as well. Thank you.
Just a quick suggestion. Instead of waiting for this civil court case that Beverly mentioned to play out, which, of course, will take years, how about there's only two election commissions in this county, yours and I believe San Joaquin's. How about you do a direct request with the Secretary of State for active, inactive, and canceled as a commission? And let's see if they deny that. That's my suggestion. Thank you.
Could I get counsel to weigh in on that? You see any problem with us doing that?
No, I don't. I mean, I think the commission can do that, and it would you would just go about it in literally the same way that this item is on agenda. You would put it on agenda, and, you know, for discussion.
Yeah.
And, you know, reach a vote.
Draft something.
Yeah, yeah. Like to send a request to the state for that, whatever information you'd like.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad idea.
Yeah, it would be great.
Okay.
So I'll put it on the agenda for next.
Yeah.
Hey guys, yeah, that was my question too, because we have it consider a request to County Council to provide a legal opinion regarding accessing the canceled voter rolls. So you guys talk back and forth, but none of you guys ever went to council, and this looks like it's worded to council. So
yeah,
I don't know if they...
We would be making the request to council, and then they would be doing the research.
But not if in fact, you know, council does have anything currently in regards to this, or if it needs further research, or if it does need other formal.
No,
I just never saw any of you guys go to him, and so I'm curious to see what he has to say.
Yeah, no, I've discussed it with him briefly. Basically, council would have to do the research. They would consult with our election council in Sacramento, and they would figure it out and then come back to us with the report back to us on what their findings were.
Yeah, that's correct. This item today is the commission talking publicly about them wanting to put a request forward. So this would go either through county council's office or through outside council's office who might work with them, and you know, to get the answer that the commission's looking for. So this would be the procedure the commission would use in order to bring its work, in this case, through to get an answer to a legal question.
Okay. So I have submitted the copy of the case that has been filed. Did you get a copy? I thought I submitted that to you.
I don't know if I have that or not, Bev,
okay.
But this is the commission asking to do it, not you.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's how we wanted to change this, so
okay.
That it would come through the commission.
Okay.
So speaking of coming through the commission, and the idea that was just put forward is that we request these records as a commission, I was under the understanding that we had requested all the voter roll records as a commission. Did your subcommittee request them?
Yes.
Yes.
And then so from the commission, that request was made, and you were told that those would not be provided to us. Is that correct?
Correct.
Can I clarify? I'm sorry to get out of turn. You guys have never went to the
Secretary
of State.
Oh, the state. Right, to the state. Okay.
Thank
you.
You've only gone to the local registrar.
Right.
Right.
That's the difference.
Okay, so, yeah. Thank you.
Right, and at least we would get a response from the Secretary of State that would, you know, with whatever justification they're hanging their hat on, which
mm-hmm.
I'm assuming is the same that they've already given to Haberbusch, but we can try it.
Yeah.
And so just, for instance, you know, the gentleman made his comment during, you know, public comment time, and so the...
I know, it needs to be re-agendized.
Correct, yes.
I understand.
Yep.
However, we have R6. Is it able to be discussed then?
Well, we can create an ad hoc committee to work on it.
Okay.
But we'd still have to re-agendize it for approval. Yeah, because we have to draft it first.
Right.
Okay. Any other comments on R2? Okay, moving on. So at this point, for R2 anyway, we're not going to request County Council to do anything. We're going to bring something back on a future agenda regarding this item. Okay, R3.
So would you, is that the final, you're not taking action on the item?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, other than to put something on a future agenda.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, R3, discuss the statement of votes as released by the elections office and consider directing two or few commissioners to prepare draft recommendations for the commission to consider approving for board consideration at a future commission meeting. So is there any public comment on the statement of votes? Come forward, please.
Okay, I just wanted to discuss one of the things which Joanna told me would be on the statement of votes didn't actually show up there. As observers, we witnessed on March the 11th, a Monday, that they were having problems. The Sunday before, there was a time change, and it turns out that two of the four machines, their clients, they call them, were not updating to the correct time. So they shut those machines down. They tried to reboot it, didn't work. They made some phone calls, couldn't resolve it. So they just ended up shutting down the two of the four clients, which are the scanner combos in the Batcave. and they went with the two that were giving us the correct time, which sounds reasonable. But then later I found out, Joanna said, well, the two that weren't telling the correct time, that's because, you know, they're not connected to the internet. And so they weren't updated with the time change like all the other computers were. So it begs the question, why were those two telling the correct time? Does that mean that those two were connected to the internet? And then the following, I think it was the following day, I don't have the exact date, I believe it was the following day I came in, and it turned out that, yeah, here we go. It was actually the 12th of March on a Tuesday. So the client number 3 and 4 that had the correct time and date the day before, well, one of those two clients was no longer having the correct time. So they shut that client down. So then they were left with one working client that had the correct time and the correct date. So the one that had been working before, this time it had the correct time, but it had an incorrect date. So it was the 12th, but it said on that client that it was actually still the 11th. So then they were using just one client, which is a computer scanner combo, and that client was telling the correct time. Well, come, you know, a couple days later, and I arrive, and that one client that had been limping along, turns out it's no longer telling the correct time. It's 1 hour behind. And I'm like, well, you can't scan using this because it's not giving the right time stamp to these ballots, because I was assuming they were going to go based on the audit log and the time stamp would be incorrect. And she said, oh, no, that's okay. We're going to go ahead and go with that because we're going to do a full report on the statement of votes that explains this problem that we had. And then I read through the statements of votes, and there was no explanation to that regard. Thank you.
Ms. Hobbs, have you written up what you just stated about the time stamps and the date stamps? Have you written that up at all?
Yeah, you know, I was considering doing that as part of the presentation today, but we had so much other material to talk about, I didn't want to take that time. But I will write that up in a formal manner.
I'm very interested in, I tried to take notes, but, you know, it's like I didn't really client this, client that.
Yeah.
I'd like to see the information in a form that I can process, because that's very disconcerting, because you say you were told that they had the wrong, I know we did the time change, and then you're saying they had the wrong time, date or whatever, but then and then you were told that's because they weren't connected to the internet, but then some of them had the right date after that period. So yes, I would also question, then were they connected to the internet at some point?
Yeah, that's my concern as
yeah.
well.
That's very disconcerting. Okay. So anyway, the point is, if you write that up, can you email that to us?
Okay, I will.
Okay,
thank you.
Okay, thank you.
The statement of vote is, what, 720 pages long? It's a great document. I like things that seem to be complete. What I question about the document is the certification that's in the first few pages. I don't know why this thing was certified without showing any receipts, or I think there was one reference where they reconciled something, they went back. But in view of the fact that dozens of us went out and observed firsthand, what we could see looked chaotic, to say the least. And some of the results that Laura has compiled show anomalies, things that don't add up, log files that don't reconcile with other tools of audit logs. So I really question whether or not, and I don't believe, that the ROV's stamp of approval, the certification, has any merit at all. All we have is her word that everything was okay. And this is an enormously complex process, even for a small county. Lots of moving parts, lots of complexities, and lots of things that looked out of order. So I don't accept that certification. If I were buying gas at a gas station, I'd want a stamp of approval by some third party, maybe the county or whoever, that actually measures what I'm getting there, and they do that every year. There's no such thing or no counterpart to that for our own elections, and our elections are enormously high-stake propositions, as you know. The stakes couldn't be higher. And so we need to make sure this is right and done transparently and fairly. Thank you.
I just have a comment about something. I had a conversation with Dr. Hobbs. Apparently, Joanna had a press release March 28th, and there were some problems to be looking at the audit log, and it doesn't sound like she looked at that. So this whole morning is just nauseating, hearing about all this information, all this data, research time, and here we are after this certification, and, you know, I was one of the people that asked that it not happen at the last Board of Supervisor meeting, and Patrick Jones, Supervisor Jones, said no. And so I think I don't know how to backpedal some of this, but I can hardly tolerate all this new information because I don't go to these commission meetings. I've got a lot going on, like some of us. We have other obligations and commitments, but this is absolutely a living nightmare to hear this. Thank you.
Statement of votes.
Statement of votes, absolutely. Thank you for keeping me in line. I think it's page 7 or 9 in the statement of vote is the incident report where the registrar was supposed to report problems to the Secretary of State. So reading that, there was only one problem listed, and I believe it was the machines being off by 1 hour was the only report. And what Laura, Dr. Hobbs, forgot to mention is when subsequent days that she came in, one of those machines was 1 day off. A full day. That was not reported in the incident report. These machines not being able to reboot and come back online, that was not in the incident report. There was a lot of things the registrar did not put in the incident report. That sounds like incompetence to me. Why would that not be put in the incident report? That's a question they need to answer.
Anyone else for public comment? Okay, seeing none, any comments when you get to?
Just trying to understand the intention behind the way that R3 is written. Or is that just just in case we wanted
just a
to do
catch-all.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Any comments from Ms. Gray or Ms. Michaud? Okay. Then we'll move on. I'm not going to personally propose anything right now. Okay. Okay. Moving on to R4. discuss observations from the March 5th, 2024 primary election, consider directing two or fewer commissioners to prepare draft recommendations for the commission to consider approving for board consideration at a future commission meeting. Okay, anybody else have any comments on the March 5th election?
Go ahead. Chair.
Yes.
Apologies. I don't have any comments regarding the March 5th election, but if we could go back to that prior item and
sure.
if the commissioners wouldn't mind just taking a vote to take no action, council and I agree that is, just for the record, the best option.
Okay. All right. So back to R3, I'll make a motion that we take no action at this time.
I second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, back to R4. Anything from the two of you on R4 at this point?
You know, part of our job is trying to bring everyone together as far as elections go. When I was in there observing and stuff, there was not equal treatment. And I basically got told I was going to be thrown out of the room because I sighed when I sat down, which is kind of a habit for me. And I mean, I think that was totally uncalled for. I mean, you know, to be told there is no talking and we shouldn't be treated. I don't see people trying to bring it together when there's that much of a okay.
I have experienced a little bit of that as well, but I, you know, when we're talking about bringing people together, I think it has to come from both sides. So we have people come in here and call the ROV and the workers all kinds of names. And then
right.
Right. You know, you personally aren't, but then we, you know, go to observe, and then they're, you know, they just look at the observers as, oh, you're part of that group. But it definitely has to come from both sides in trying to work together and having respect for one another.
Yeah, I will work with Joanna on this issue. I think that we all want to see, you know, this issue improve. And, you know, people are people, and so
right.
Some people are just nicer than others, and, you know, I experienced that, a little bit of that myself down there, you know, where some people were more friendly and willing to answer questions, and some people would answer questions, but you could tell they weren't that friendly. So, you know, people are people. But, yes, we can all work on it from both sides, and, you know, the people that I observed with down there, this is just my experience, they were all very respectful and trying to be quiet and trying to follow the rules. So I, you know, I'm not sure who all of the troublemakers have been in the past that have set the ROV's office, you know, in a defensive position, but I'm sure it can be worked on, so I will work on that.
Yeah, I mean, definitely there's room for improvement, and I think we can improve it. Working together, I think we can make improvements. And then you're right. I mean, just different personalities. There are some people that are always helpful at the ROV and others that, you know, they have their days. But, I mean, I have my days. You know, I have my times of the day. And, you know, there's times when I can take more, and then other times when someone's sighing, you might be like, can you just not sigh? I've had enough today. And, you know, elections, we have to remember, elections are a really high pressure. It's a high pressure event. There's a lot going on. But, yeah, we can make improvements.
All right. Any public comment on R4?
Yes, I would like to say that there's been a problem with people who bring problems forth or highlight issues that could be improved upon or bring transparency to the process, of those people being characterized as troublemakers or personally attacking election workers. I've probably, out of all the people I've seen observing elections, I've never seen one incidence of such behavior. If folks want to make those types of accusations, they need to supply us with actual times, dates, witnesses, and reports of what went on, because there's a mischaracterization coming, I think, from the top down. This is a narrative that I witnessed them speaking about at the SEER summit in Washington, D.C. It was an election summit that mostly only Secretary of States attended. It was funded by the far left organization, which David Becker is a part of. And our ROV attended that and had a section. She was speaking there. And the narrative that I saw throughout those 2 days in which they spoke was that there was a true threat from the public, that the election workers were being harassed, they were being threatened. And it seemed as if the narrative was that instead of having 6 feet for COVID, we now need 6 feet to protect all these election workers that are in danger of their lives, in danger of having post-traumatic stress disorder, which is what Mr. Gates out of Arizona claimed to have had. And they're using this as a means of reducing transparency to the ordinary citizens who have legitimate concerns about their elections. So we need to be aware of this. And if there are validated instances of abuse, of harassment, we need to be on top of that. But just to throw it around and banty it about and to put this kind of stigma on people who actually care about our elections and want to see things work well, that's not right. Thank you.
You know what? I'd like to make a comment here. I've heard a lot of things today that are very disconcerting. What was just said also is very disconcerting because, I can't personally say if there is an agenda that is being pushed down through the ROV offices in general, this is the narrative that you want to get out there. But, I mean, from what I just heard, it is potentially a possibility because I have personally asked the ROV's staff, who are these instigators? What situations happened that caused you to be so defensive? And I'm not sure I have gotten. I think that we do need to know dates, times, people, incidences, because I have never personally seen anything at the ROV's office that was bad. I mean,
I witnessed one thing, and I can't remember what he said, but there was one individual who was angry. He went in to observe, and he said something about, I don't know, election fraud. But it wasn't, like, he didn't threaten anybody violently, but he was loud, mm-hmm. and he was angry. And we all told him that he needed to be quiet. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's that one incident that they're using. I mean, he is a big man. He's tall, mm-hmm. large, and so maybe they felt threatened. I think some of it is societal. It's not just with the elections and elections office. I've participated in a lot of school board meetings, and as you know, there was an attack on parents visiting school board meetings and speaking out and calling them, the number one domestic, terrorist threat and things like that. Because they're willing to fight for their children. And so there's this disconnect in our groups as a society as to what is considered violent or what is dangerous. So I think, if we could get dates and times and specific actions, then we could evaluate it. Is this a threat? Is this dangerous? Let's be objective about it.
Yeah. Or maybe there is just a perception because there have been incidences elsewhere. There's a perception that anybody that even shows a little bit of negative emotion is potentially dangerous. And so I could see where, some people could be threatened by that kind of thing. But yeah, and maybe we can work with the ROV's office on a standard, like standard of what is acceptable behavior and what isn't, and when people are asked to leave and when they're allowed to stay, and how people are treated on both sides, because I know for a fact that some observers were not treated very well during this last election.
And I don't know. I mean, I'd like to know, well, what is the not very well? I mean, I've been there where I've gotten scowls or, you know, rolled eyes or whatever, but I don't feel like I'm being treated poorly when I receive that. I just think, well, you know, she's having a bad day. I don't take it personally.
Right.
So I wonder, what is that being treated badly behavior?
Well, that's
is it just
why
not
I'm
being nice?
If it was more defined,
right.
Maybe then people wouldn't be so offended on either side. You know, and I don't know what that looks like, but it's worth discussing. Okay. Public comment, please.
Thank you. Yeah, what you guys said, I echo. You know, with the election integrity committees, we had incident reports. Maybe something like that could be implemented in the ROV office when things are way out of line. Those could be documented that way. I'd also recommend that everything, and I believe that everything is videotaped wherever there's any action, there should be cameras, and those cameras should include the people that are observing. Then, if it's a real problem, make sure that everybody in that room or that area is videotaped, and if you had the incident report filing system, you could always go back, verify, argue about whether this was an insult or whether this was out of line. And over time, you could develop standards that would at least make things run smoother, and it would also set expectations, reasonable expectations from the staff and the observers, because nobody likes people looking over your shoulder when you're trying to do your job. So I always felt bad, in a sense, about going there and observing, because I remember when I was working, I didn't want somebody, you know, asking me a bunch of questions. But that is the system. That has to happen. And I know the the one thing that cannot happen is that we are removed from the process. Things cannot get that bad to where they can say, well, we have to cordon this off. You can't see this. You can't hear that. No, we always need meaningful observation. We always need enough transparency so we can have eyes on the process down to the tiniest detail if it matters. We don't need privacy. We don't need private information, but we do need to know what's going on at a granular level in order for this to be meaningful. So whatever it takes to get to that point, don't throw the meaningful observation out because there's a few bad apples. Get rid of the bad apples by some orderly type of process. Thank you.
So I think that these intimidation accusations and the accusations of harassment down at the ROV are unfounded completely, except for my own personal. Now, I was intimidated down there. I felt completely intimidated. I was also lied to 3 times, and it was very uncomfortable to me. So this is exactly why I was not even able to go down there, because of their accusations they made toward us. I was actually fearful that I would be that person that they were going to put on the news that said something out of line or wrong that says fraud. Well, if we're out here seeing fraud, I think that's technically a good word to use. So there needs to be a lot more transparency in all this, and we're never going to have transparency when one side has a media pushing a campaign out there about harassment, when there's never been any accusations in this county of harassment that have been brought forward, except mine. I made a police report about my own. That's harassment. And Why should I feel intimidated to where I can't go down and speak or look or watch at this without feeling like I'm walking on needles? But that's the way it is, because we are intimidated down there. That's the way it is. We're just the little guy, and we're walking into a situation that's already figured out, and we're seeing things that are abnormal. And when we ask questions, like I did to the assistant ROV, about whether there's internet connectivity or not, three different times I went in for the tour and asked that question, and they said no. You just now heard about obvious proof. If there's date changes and time changes that are happening in real time on a computer, then there's obviously internet connectivity. And I would even look into why these time changes happen at the same time as election. It's not a bad idea to look at. I feel intimidated down there.
Thank you. Excuse me, sir. This is an area where, so I don't know. I wasn't there when you felt intimidated. I don't know what anybody said to you to make you feel intimidated. I don't know what you felt intimidated about.
I just told you what I felt intimidated about. It's a nationwide campaign accusing people that want to look into elections of harassment, and we're being the intimidators. They're accusing us of doing what they're doing to us.
I'm just wondering, did someone say
something? So
that's
what I've just explained to you, and you asked me it again.
Right. Did someone say something to you specifically?
Yes. I have a police report on it. If you'd like to see my police report, I'd show it to you.
No, that's all right. That's okay. I'm just trying to get to the bottom line. Did someone say something that made someone feel intimidated?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Right. I felt like I was stalked.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yes.
I'll quickly address R4. This reminds me of this code of conduct that we went through with the Board of Supervisors. We're almost like wanting this to be almost everywhere in public offices, whether it's going to be the DA, ROV, whatever it might be, Sheriff's Office. There's a pattern of some people that are characteristically the common denominator of wherever they go. I'm not naming names. I have a good idea. If I see some of these people, I want to run the other direction, because all they'll do is say something provocative, instigate, swear, or say something so awful, and then they try to capture a reaction. And sometimes they get that from people. And if they don't, they just amp it up. So this is what a suggestion I have is, I don't know if the ROV office needs to have some kind of a code of conduct and a note on the door. I mean, these are adults, for gosh sake. It's just bad, apparently. That wrought iron fence isn't going to improve people's personalities. And this is way beyond having a bad day or a low point of a day. This has been an ongoing pattern. I went there back in November to just simply vote. And Kathy came up to me and starts verbally assaulting me. Later on, somebody gives me a sticker to be an observer. I did not show up to be an observer. So I'm going back in time. There are problems in their staffing. So if they need some therapy, counseling, debriefings, and ways to have far better days than the crappy days that we're hearing about, they're not random. So code of conduct, I don't know. This bullying, there's the same people that go there, fake news people that just go there to laugh and giggle and torment people. And I don't think any of us need to be bystanders and call it they had a crummy day. So it's not going to fly with me at all. Thank you.
I have a question for you. You said you were given an observer sticker when you weren't there as an observer. Is that something that you felt was harassing of you? Is that part of the harassment that you felt like you...
I thought it was way back in the November election. This is for a special election in Shasta Lake. I went there to vote, and I asked, got passed around by three people, because I said I want the most secure way, the least fraudulent way. Sit and wait, get passed to another person, another person, another person. Finally, and I did not ask for the ROV Allen whatsoever, but she comes down and starts to harangue and become quite verbally rude. It was taped by Donnie and aired. So to answer your question, even back then, they just see certain people and they presume I'm there to cause trouble. I was not there. And to be given an observer sticker, I thought I'm not going to even make a fuss over there. So I was just fed up. And I tell you what, this is unfair to have people having to make police reports when they're just trying to take care of their civic duty. I know of another person that had to use some self-protection that day. And I think we all know who that is. Thank you.
I'd just like to say that I'm glad you further brought that up, that that was further brought up, just about the preconception, and it could be on both sides. I mean, okay, yes. So that's, I feel like that's something that can be worked on. You know, we all need a reset. We all need to go back to the good old days when people were polite, had shame, and had morals and values and respect. So I'll work on that. Okay, next.
My experience of the people that I've been volunteering with for the last year and a half is that they are kind and thoughtful and courteous and respectful. A year and a half ago, I was canvassing. We were canvassing for addresses that may or may not have been real. And we knocked on a door in a very nice neighborhood, and a man answered the door, and we identified ourselves, and he says, my wife works at the election office. And then we wanted to ask him questions, and he came unglued, and he was threatening, and we just did what we were supposed to do, which was leave. Yesterday, I was out canvassing the...
Excuse me, Margaret, but theoretically, we're discussing the March 5th election still.
I'm talking about people being combative, violent.
We sort of got off topic, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we met up with a belligerent lady yesterday, and she came right at us. So, and she wasn't on our side.
Okay. And if you have anything further to talk about that topic, please bring it back to an open comment time or something.
I can do that.
Okay. All right. We're still on March 5th.
Yes. Observations for March 5th. I think that's what we're supposed to be talking about. So the elections office continues to not allow observers to see the vote-by-mail envelopes and the signatures thereon. This is, I believe, the third election in a row that the elections office is blatantly violating that law. They put cameras up on a wall for a room that's downstairs on the opposite side of the building, and those cameras, trust me, we can't see the election, the envelopes and the signatures thereon. Why is this being allowed to continue? Many of us, including me, have been complaining about this for, I believe, three elections now. Why is it still happening? I just don't get it. And then when the 1% tally was happening this last election, and they threw in the District 1 recount, whatever, the configuration of the room that day was so the observers were all shoved up basically against the entrance glass walls and doorways, and some of the tables were 30 feet away. How are any? And now the next day, I will give the registrar the credit. They did change the configuration the next day, but they went. But that shouldn't happen in the first place. And here's the deal. Since the Moldy recall, okay, the registrar's office has a lot of discretion. They have a lot of discretion with how they operate and do many of their things in that office. A lot of discretion. And since that recall of 2022, that office continues to make most decisions, the vast majority of decisions, against fairness and transparency. The vast majority, I'll say 95%. Once in a while, they'll do something for fairness and transparency, but they vastly do not. And they expect us not to be upset about it and not call them to the carpet about it? Are you kidding me? No, this is Saul Alinsky, Cloward Piven Tactics. Please read those books. It's very important. That is what they are doing to us. They are using radical left progressive social tactics against us. It's exactly what they're doing. Read those. Study your enemy. That is what our registrar employees are doing. They're using those tactics against us who just want a fair and transparent election. Do we want to be nice and polite and respectful? Yes. But if they would just make those decisions for fairness and transparency, for fairness, did I say that again? For fairness and transparency? If they would continue to lean that direction, I think a lot of us would be a little less pissed off. Thank you.
I hear what you're saying about the distance, because at our precinct, they had observer seats clear across the room from where, and it was a large room, from where people were checking in and getting their ballots. There's no way you could have heard what was happening. You couldn't have seen what was happening. And then that was a design. That wasn't the supervisor of the precinct didn't design that. That was a design that came from the ROV's office. You know, they go to each site. They look at the layout. They draw pictures of how the tables should be laid out on that day. And ours, I don't know how the others were, but ours, there's absolutely no way. I mean, they had to have been 15 feet or more away from the table that they could have seen or heard what was going on.
And I wanted to add one more thing. When I was observing upstairs the 1% count, okay, the people that were looking at the ballots were standing right in front of the box they were putting them in, so we got to see how long their hair was. And that's all we could see. We did not see any ballots at all. Okay?
Yeah, I had that. Thank you. I had that same experience, and it was very frustrating. I did some observation of the hand count, and you could not see well enough to read if they were putting it into the right box. And so, I mean, what was the point of observing, right?
Right. But upstairs, you literally could not even see the ballot.
Gotcha.
I mean, obviously the point of observing is to be able to see. And yet, as you know, as Jim pointed out, most people don't like someone standing right over their shoulder. And for safety's sake, you wouldn't want someone literally right behind you. But what if we had document readers? You know, we've used them in the classroom. It's a very simple setup. It projects what the document is onto a screen. They put the ballot there. It projects it. Everybody can see it. They put it in the ballot box. They put it, the document reader, in the ballot box. Then everybody would be able to see. I mean, we don't have control over that, but it's something that we can suggest. It'd be very low cost and would increase the transparency and, I think, the peace.
All right. Any other comments on the March 5th election at this point? Okay, seeing none, I'll make a motion that we don't take any action on this item at this point.
I second.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, receive commissioner and ad hoc committee reports. Let me start by saying that this is Ms. Gray's last meeting, and I wanted to thank her for her service.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And my understanding is that Supervisor Jones will be appointing a replacement. I'm not sure exactly when that's happening, but I would like to encourage anybody that's here or anybody that may be listening that if you'd like to reach out to Supervisor Garmin or Supervisor Rickert and encourage them to appoint somebody to this commission, that would be great. And I have another item I'd like to discuss during this time, but I'll let you go next right now.
Okay. I've been looking at the voter rolls. I finally got them. I put in a request on February 22nd. Now, for my public records request, I also had several questions. I have still never gotten those, a response at all, and now it's 2 months. Okay. I was told it went to legal, so I don't know, but I would still like to get the... Will I be getting those? Or because I'm no longer going to be the commission, am I?
Well, if you put in a Public Records Act request as the commissioner, I mean, or was it as a private party?
At that point, it was as a commissioner. I signed it as commissioner. But, I mean, I never got any responses. I was able to get my files.
We voted on the voter rolls. But she hasn't received answers to her questions.
Right.
Was that a separate request, or was that part of that same one?
I submitted it at the same time.
Was it a separate request, though?
It became a separate request, okay, because I later did the voter rolls. And
I'm not sure that we voted on those questions.
Right, we didn't.
So I imagine that it would go to her as a private individual?
We had had these discussions, and so those separate requests would come back through the commission, just as we were trying to do earlier.
So even though we hadn't voted on that request, it would still come back to us?
Yes.
Okay.
And I do believe that those would be interpreted as coming from, or attempting to come from, the commission.
Okay. So even though we didn't vote on them?
A procedural misunderstanding.
No, the understanding was that the commission hadn't voted on them.
And right.
So they needed to come back through the commission. But So
he's saying we need to come back and vote.
I would just recommend that you redo your Public Record Act request with whatever information you want and be done with it.
Okay.
Not as a commissioner.
Right. But, I mean, I would have expected to be told there was some kind of a hang-up.
Well, we did. We told you that.
No, not with my questions.
Well, it's fine. Maybe there was a misunderstanding, but that is... That,
okay.
So we've had this issue in the past. We had somebody else from the public address us and request that we research why the ROV's office is not responding in a timely manner to Public Record Act requests. This is another example, apparently, but to clean this up, you're very clear now. You need to disregard the one that you put in through the commission, and you need to go do your own thing with a new Public Record Act request.
Okay. I mean, the reason...
But...
When I did request a couple years ago, as a citizen, I didn't get responses to that either for over 2 months.
Right. And I mean, it's still something that is on a list that needs to be looked into eventually. But, okay, I just rewrote it down. Okay. All right. So do you have anything else?
I do have a question. Okay, on the voter rolls in 2020, and I don't know who's going to be able to answer this for me. In 2020, those rolls had people's birthdays on them, okay? Month, day, and year. Now, currently, I'm being told I can only get the year that they are born. Now, my question is if someone turns 18 this year, were they 18 before the primary? Will they be 18 before the November? It makes it very difficult. And so I would kind of like to know why you can't see a birthdate. A birthdate's important, okay? And I would also like to add the fact that, you know, we do need to clean up the voter rolls. We need to start fresh, And when I was looking at stuff over at Vital Records, okay, you know, we don't have to we don't get to look at an ID right now because that infringes on our right to vote or whatever, okay? But over at the Vital Records, when people would apply to get their birth certificate for their child, for themselves, whatever, they would go up to pay and say, do you want to see my driver's license? And the response would be, no, by signing this, you're signing under perjury of law, you are who you are. So now you don't need that for a birth certificate, which you take to the DMV, not knowing if it's, I mean, there's so much identity theft. How do you know someone didn't steal this birth certificate so their kid could become this person? And so now the DMV can give you the right to vote when you don't even have proof that who got the birth certificate was who they were. It's the honor system. what is going on in this world? I mean, that seems very important, and I see this loop coming in where, no one cares who anybody is. But go ahead, steal someone's identity, steal someone's vote. I don't understand, and I'd really like someone to explain that to me.
That's shocking to me that you don't need to show your ID to get a birth certificate, but yet to get a library card, you do.
Yeah.
Okay, do you have anything to report?
No.
Okay. I wanted to propose that we cancel our May 6th meeting, but only if Clerk of the Board, staff, and council would be available earlier on the following meeting in case we need the time. I personally need some time to work on some of these things. We're going to have a very full agenda for the next meeting, and it would give Lisa and I some time to work on some of the things that we've committed to working on. But again, I'd like to maybe start the meeting at noon or 1, depending upon how the agenda hashes out. But I already have a fairly long list of agenda items. So what do you think about that, Stephanie?
Chair Lunda, I would have to look into that and be able to get back to you. I'm not sure. I would have to check with my staff on their availability.
Okay.
I have the same response. Okay. I typically am fairly booked, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then I'd like to make a motion that that you guys allow me and the clerk of the board to make the ultimate decision as to whether the next meeting is canceled, depending upon whether or not council and the clerk of the board can meet earlier on the following meeting.
My input would be yes, but I want to say additionally, even if they're not able to, it seems like it still would be beneficial if we needed to move any extra to the following meeting. You know, if we cancel the next meeting, say the staff isn't there to give an additional time on the next meeting, then any extra gets moved. Any things that we don't have time for get moved to the following
meeting. Well, I think that'll be a month from now, or 4 weeks from now, and there's already a laundry list. We're going to have a new commissioner, at least one, hopefully more.
Do we have a date on that?
No.
Okay.
No, but I personally would not want to cancel the meeting and then also be limited to a three-hour meeting if the agenda on the following meeting, if the agenda pans out to be what I think it's going to be. That would be my motion is to, I'd like to be given the latitude to make the decision with the clerk of the board.
Did you say you moved?
Okay. I'm sorry, what?
Did you make a motion or?
I did.
I second.
And counsel, if I may, I'll defer to you. Are we able to take action on something that's not on the agenda for this?
I was told by council and by you that you guys would prefer that I bring changes in the schedule to a vote.
Correct.
Of the commission.
Correct, but
I can
not
also
on today's agenda.
I can also make those myself. So
well, so not to, you know, because it's into the government process.
Yeah.
I think if we were actually trying to formalize something along those lines, we would bring them forward for discussion, and that meets the Brown Act requirement, as tedious as that is. However, you know, just generally with regard to your next meeting, if, you know, you don't want to have a next meeting, you don't have to notice it. You can notice, you know, if you want the next meeting to be made too, you can notice for that meeting, you know, prepare the agenda, and that's the next meeting.
Right. So I was just having it as a doing it as a courtesy.
No, that part's good, but I think if we were, for instance, what the commission wanted to do was, courtesy for the public, that type of thing. Say this is what our schedule is, basically.
Yeah.
That we would bring forward. You would say this is the new schedule.
Right.
After we've gone through some bumps, in membership and this kind of stuff, and now we've, this is our new, a revised. Schedule
correct.
For the year. Yeah.
And that's something we'll probably do at the next meeting if we don't have one in 2 weeks. The following meeting, we will discuss a revised calendar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's the way you would do it.
Right. But as for this next meeting, so we won't take a vote.
Right.
Since it wasn't agendized.
Yes.
And we discussed it, and that'll be that. Okay, thank you. All right, anything else for any commissioner report? Okay.
Do you?
What's that?
Do you have commissioner?
No. I mean, I basically just did.
Are you going to request comment?
You know what? I have always been unclear, since this isn't a voting item, is public comment required?
No.
I didn't think so. Okay. I didn't think so, but there was a question about that. Okay. Moving on to R6.
And just to clarify for the record, did Commissioner Michaud have any update or any report? Okay.
R6, take the following action. Discuss and determine election issues for which the commission may wish to provide recommendations to the Shasta County Board of Supervisors and direct two or fewer commissioners per item to prepare draft recommendations for the commission to consider approving for the board consideration at the future commission meeting. It's a lot of words. I at our next meeting, assuming it might be 4 weeks from now, one of the items that will be on the agenda is to go over the ad hoc committee list. Well, since we'll have a new member and we'll sort it all out. But I would like to make a motion right now that we form an ad hoc committee, and at this point it can just be me, unless you want to participate with all of the other things on your plate, to research one-day voting. And so you can join me or you cannot.
I'll pass on that. I have another suggestion. So we need to move on.
Okay.
Your...
So, so I'd like to make a motion that we form an ad hoc committee at this point consisting of myself to do some research on one-day voting.
I'll second it.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. I would like to propose a potentially one-person committee on submitting a request for complete voter rolls, including canceled voter rolls of the state.
Yeah, to the Secretary of State.
Right.
Yeah, that would be great. And I, if you want to draft something, I will. I definitely review it.
Okay.
Okay. So the motion is that we form an ad hoc committee consisting of Commissioner Lund, Commissioner Michaud, to draft some sort of submittal to the Secretary of State's office regarding voter rolls.
I'll second it.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
For both of these items, we need to take public comment on them.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Can we do it in one swoop, or it has to be separate for each one?
If we want to go through and discuss any other additional ad hoc committees, if those were the only two, then we can take public comment on both of them. If there's going to be more, I recommend that we discuss those, and then we can open public comment up after that. And then I will just ask that the commission redoes their votes. I have the motion for the first one as a motion made by Lund, Commissioner Lund, and seconded by Commissioner Gray. The second one was a motion from Commissioner Michaud. Who was the second?
I was.
Gray. So we have the motion and a second for both if we want to take public comment on them, and then we could make a motion or vote on both of those two.
Okay. Any public comment on either of those? Okay, seeing none. We'll take a vote on the first one?
On both of them.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. That's it. Meeting adjourned.
Can you get the...